From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of March 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's from Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. And Drew Lerner will be here to take a look at the weather forecast. Along the way, I'll tell you about sheltering in place, my home studio, what the webinars we've been producing for the Farm Doc team are like, and we'll hear from the commercial ag team's beef specialist, Travis Mateer, about his experiences on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished in Chicago. May futures in the corn pit up a penny and a quarter, 348.5. The July there, 353.5, 1.5 higher. And December corn at 367.25, up 2 cents. May beans down 5.25 at 881.5. July 2.75 lower, $8.84.75 the settlement price. November soybeans up 2.5 at 877.5. The bean oil 9 cents higher, and the bean meal down $10.90 on the afternoon. Wheat futures in the May contract up 18.5 at 580. July, the harvest month for the soft red at 567.75, 12.5 higher. And the hard red July at 504.75, up 9.5 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago up 230 for the April at 108.45. June at 96.32.5. That finished down 70 cents. The feeders are $1.85 higher at $132.75 per 100 pounds. And lean hogs in the April contract at $65.85, down 57.5 cents. For the afternoon. Crude oil is up 50 cents a barrel at $24.50. The ethanol futures about a penny and a tenth higher at 90 and 8 tenths of a cent. And heating oil or diesel fuel is at $1.10 a gallon. That's up 2 and a tenth. Gasoline at 53¾ cents per gallon, 9 1/10 cents higher for the day. We're now joined by Jackie Vank. She's been Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. Hey, Jackie. I hope that you're doing well on this Wednesday afternoon.
Well, we're both doing great. Sheltering in place.
You know, we're all sheltering in place, and it's
yes, we are.
It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Speaking of which, if you've not been on our website at willag.org, and I'll just do a promo here real quick, Jackie. Yesterday's webinar that we held with the Farm Doc team is posted there as a YouTube video. Jim Lowe, who you heard on this program about a week and a half ago, did a great job with slides about what sheltering in place does and how he views COVID-19 and coronavirus and what we can learn from the livestock sector. If you roll about 8 minutes into it and get started and listen to just his part, I think it's 40 minutes long, but his part's only 18 minutes, at least the presentation is, it's worthwhile. So go by the willag.org website and take a quick listen to that. It's close to the top of the page. You can also find a way to pre-register or register for the whole series if you want. On Friday, we'll be talking with a couple of folks from the Kansas City Federal Reserve. That's going to be really important given what's happening in Washington, D.C. with the aid packages, and they'll give us an idea of what the impact looks like here in the United States. Now, Jackie Vakes is with us again. Jackie, thanks for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about how you see support and resistance this week?
Well, there's been quite a few changes. There's no question about that. May corn support $3.35, $3, and $2.81. Resistance $3.90, $4.06, and $4.22. And we have the 5.5 where the downtrend line and the uptrend line actually meet. July support 325, 305, and 286. Resistance 363, 386, and 401. And there the crossover point is 325, a little bit lower than where maize is. When you look at beans, support 860, 780, and 808. Resistance 908, 948, and 988. And we have a channel right now. The top of the channel is 1056, and the bottom is 766. July support 866. 829, 820, resistance 903, 926, 950, and that channel, the top is 976 and the bottom is 835.
How are the export inspections for the week?
Well, we've got wheat running 9% ahead of a year ago, which is exactly where it was last week. Corn is 41% behind. It was 42% behind last week, so that improved a little bit. Soybeans, I had 9% compared to 10% last week. So kind of the same trend that we've been seeing for a little while already.
How about managed money? Have they changed where they believe things are headed?
Yes, they have. When you look at managed money and you look at soft red wheat, they are now 31,000 long compared to 18 last week. They're net short 106,000 corn versus 90 last week. Net long 11,000 beans compared to 51,000 short last week. Net long 46,000 soy meal compared to 29,000 short. And net long 6,000 soy oil compared to 1,000 short last week. So, yeah, they've made some big changes on the bean side, and well, we've been able to see it in the marketplace, too.
I want to take a look forward to the grain stocks and the acreage figures. Those are due out next Tuesday on the last day of the month. Do you have some figures as to what the trade is expecting?
Well, one of the surveys is out. I participated in the survey myself. The average guess for corn, 93.4. My average guess for corn is 95.5, so I'm a whole lot different than they are. Soybeans, 85. I'm at 84. All wheat, 44 and a quarter. I'm at 44. When you look at cotton, they're at 12.9, and I'm taking some acres away from cotton, so I'm down to 12. If you look at the grain stocks, average guess is 8.1 compared to 8.6 last year. I'm at 8.3. Soybeans, 2.1 compared to 2.72 last year. I'm at 2.3. And wheat, 1.4 compared to 1.593, and I'm at 1.4 also. So we'll get more estimates of groups of analysts coming out as we go through the week. But for right now, that's the info I've got.
Why are you on the higher side for the corn number?
Well, I penciled the corn and looked at the potential. And I usually use, of course, I use Illinois as a good barometer for what's going on. I sat down and penciled corn based on the average production levels and the average, the average yield. And corn at this point in time still pencils better there than it does anywhere else. And so, we'll have to see, I guess, when you look at the insurance numbers. It just still, to me, this is an early, early guess. And they were doing this a number of weeks ago, before we really catapulted down the way we are. And so I think that the chances are that the numbers will be higher. The thing is, when you look at nine out of the last 15 years, the final corn number was higher than what we came out with in March. And so it certainly leans that way to believe that it could be a higher number. Might not show up on this report. I don't know. Everything depends upon, we know that North Dakota's got a lot of problems. So I haven't got any kind of an idea what they might have guessed.
Okay, a lot of times on report days, or if we happen to be talking to you or when we talk to you afterwards, you will have day of and 2 weeks later kind of changes. Did you pull those for this week?
Yep, I did. When you look at corn on the day of, the most likely to happen is down 16 cents. And second most likely to happen is up 14 cents. So you can kind of balance in between the two. When you look at 2 weeks down the road, basically the positive change up 13 or down 11. When you look at beans, you've got either up 23 or down 23. And the up 23 has a ranking of 4. So it's just saying it's not as likely to happen as the down, which has a ranking of 2. As we look into 2 weeks down the road, it's more likely for beans to be positive 36 than it is for them to be down 23. And so, of course, with everything that's going on in the marketplace right now, it could be anything. We really don't know.
Let's turn your attention to ethanol at this point. It has had a rough ride, at least as it appears in the sheer numbers in trade, when you're looking at what the value of ethanol is, especially when compared to crude oil and what that means for ethanol plants. What are your assessments?
Well, we just had an ethanol report come out this morning. Production was down 3% versus last week, but it was 3% higher than a year ago.
Hmm.
Kind of a surprising number, right? And ethanol stocks were actually down 1% to 2%. So what we may be interpreting in our mind, and perception is everything in the marketplace, maybe isn't as bad as what everybody's thinking. We do know that there are ethanol plants that are shutting down. We know that there are ethanol plants that are on maintenance, and that things are not great in the ethanol market. And that's primarily because of the fact that we've seen the oil market just dragging ethanol market prices down. When I looked at the acreage, you asked me, some of the things I thought about when I was looking at this. I looked at if these ethanol plants continue to have the problems that we have, of course, we're not going to have as much demand for corn from ethanol. Someone said the other day that we could lose an extremely significant amount. I can't remember, so I'm not going to say a number. But, that would be negative because it would increase our carryout. We know that sheltering in place certainly reduces how much fuel is being used. Now that, and everything will depend upon how long we have to do that. The good side, the perhaps positive negative if you're a farmer, positive perhaps for price for a farmer, but it's a potential wet and cold conditions that we've got in the U.S. You could see that delaying the early corn planting as we go further. And from a corn standpoint, also, the safrinha corn crop in Brazil is really getting off to not a very good start. Let's just put it that way. And I also looked at increased domestic demand in Brazil, and that could limit how much corn that they can actually export in 2020. So, those are positive things to us. You look at beans, we got stronger meal prices right now due to lower DDG production in the U.S. because of the ethanol situation. Potential for Chinese purchases from phase one. The negative would be if we have disruptions in the international shipping. We haven't heard much about that just yet, but it could be something that could happen. The soybean production estimates in both Brazil and Argentina have been declining because of hot and dry conditions. And so we're thinking, I'm thinking that we may not see as big a crop down there. So that's a positive for us. And we've got lots of opportunity for all kinds of problems labor-wise down in Brazil and Argentina both.
And finally, why don't you take us around the planet? Because I bet you pulled some things again this week.
Well, I looked at China. Of course, I've mentioned before that we have a niece who actually lives in the Hubei province. She's back in her apartment after being quarantined at her future in-laws for 2.5 months. We're seeing business really picking up over there. And, those are all good things for us. The one thing that I found that was of interest, and it seems as if when you listen to people talk, the world ended in China, but Starbucks reports their second quarter sales were equal to their first quarter sales. So the world didn't end over there. And we look at Brazil. Now, Brazil, of course, and Argentina both are starting to have to deal with COVID. The Port of Santos Union wanted to shut the port down because of COVID. They denied it. They said, no way. The port is too important. And the Port of Santos, by the way, is the largest port in Latin America. And they're the leading exporter of beans, corn, cotton, coffee, and sugar from there. So for now, all is normal. But like I mentioned earlier, it isn't uncommon to have labor unrest and the peak export season. So, I think one of the biggest concerns that's been expressed is grain moving across the country. Because if they would shut those ports down, those storage facilities will get to capacity. And then, grain transportation stops. And then what do you do with the grain that you're harvesting? Those are all really tough questions. And you go to Argentina, their president ordered a nationwide shelter in place due to COVID. But the ports are considered essential. And yet some of the employees at the ports have been blocking the grain trucks from being able to enter. And so, these workers, I feel so sorry for the people in Argentina. And, they've got a terrible economic situation, and now they're worried about their health and the health of their families. And so I think it's very, very likely that we're probably going to see some labor disruptions, some strikes both in Argentina and Brazil in response to what's going on with COVID. And all of those things have that kind of rolling effect that impacts us and might give us a little bit of demand in our market side.
Hey, Jackie, thanks so much. You and Jeff, stay safe there, sheltering in place, okay?
Same to you and Clarion. Yep. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. That's Jackie Vakes. She is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org. That's willag.org. You know, most of us are adjusting to a new work life, sheltering in place. For me, it's not a lot different because I spent a whole lot of time by myself in a studio on campus. And now I spend a whole lot of time by myself in a studio upstairs in my home that I put together last week. By the way, very proud of myself because it sounds a lot like my studio at work. This morning, we had a Zoom meeting for the Commercial Ag team. Those are the members of Extension that work in Commercial Ag across the state of Illinois. And at the end of that meeting, we went around and talked a little bit about how each of us are adjusting. And in rural life, there's a whole different attitude. Here's Travis Mateer. He's a beef cattle specialist talking about his adjustments and how people in his world are adjusting.
It's kind of weird, but I've still been progressing. A lot of phone calls, the beef cattle side of things been interesting lately. The markets have been wild. A lot of producers trying to figure out what to do about substituting distillers grains. A lot of these ethanol plants have throttled down. So a lot of diets switching from distillers grains to corn gluten feed. A lot of producers, talked to the EVP of Illinois Beef Association. There's a lot of policy things going on right now to make sure that in the beef cattle sector, we can still market livestock, we can still ensure a good food supply, and that our supply chain's still running. So a lot of the conversations really revolve around policy and markets right now. We have continued with this wet weather, and our pastures in Illinois have not probably been in worse shape ever. We've just absolutely abused these pastures for the last two plus years. And so I think going into this year, it's going to be a challenge. So a lot of production challenge or herd management questions have really revolved around pasture management, what to do there. On a personal note, it's calving season for us at home, and so being around home has given me the opportunity to be a really heavily utilized resource by my dad and my uncle for calving season. And so that's kind of been nice. I think a lot of folks that are holed up in their home, this shelter in place, I feel for them, but I'm pretty glad that I've got cows right now that I can go take care of and get out of the house. So that's it for me.
That was Travis Mateer talking this morning about how sheltering in place has changed his life. He's a member of the Commercial Ag team for Illinois Extension. I think what's important there is that while we talk a great deal about work-life balance much of the time in the workplace, farm life is entirely different, where life and work are always in balance because sometimes they're one and the same. That's what it sounded like when you listened to Travis telling us what his work life and life were like sheltering in place. Agriculture is work and life. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. I hope you're doing well today.
Yes, I am, actually. I hope you're doing the same.
I am. Let's talk about the flooding that's taking place in some of the growing regions across the United States. We've got some rainfall. We have saturated soils. What's your assessment?
Yeah, you know, the saturation that we have right now is probably the most broad-based it's been, I think, for the whole winter season. I think we got to this point once before, maybe in January or early February, but the situation is that we are excessively wet right now in just about all of the Midwest. There's some areas in the Northwest that may be exceptional, but it does extend down to the Delta and through the Tennessee River Basin, and we have many small streams and rivers that are out of their banks. And some of the bigger rivers, of course, are in flood too, but it's not nearly as significant as it was a year ago, and we're not expecting to go down that track again. I know there's a fear out there that we're going to do that, but I don't think so. We're going to see a little bit of a break in the precipitation pattern as we get into early April. It's not necessarily going to be a permanent trend change, but it will be long enough to get the rivers back down to a reasonable level and allow for a little bit of firming of the soil to take place. In the meantime, you know, the north central U.S., unlike last year, has lost most of its snow. The only areas that are still deeply covered in snow are eastern North Dakota and northern Minnesota. and they are melting some snow up that way. But my point here is that the upper Missouri River Basin area is not going to be funneling large volumes of water downstream like they did last year while it's raining periodically in the lower valley. So the Missouri River is going to be in much better shape than it was last year. So that's already a third better than it was a year ago. And I do think that we're going to see rain resume later in April, but it's probably not going to have the same kind of long-term impact on the region. Now, with that said, we are going to still be faced with some planting delays, even in the lower parts of the Midwest for a while next month.
Maybe harvesting delays in parts of the Northwest, I suppose, too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
Hey, are there dry areas that we have to be concerned about?
Yeah, you know, there's actually a couple of areas in the U.S. One is Florida and southern Georgia. They haven't done real well with rainfall recently. But the other is in the west central high plains area and hard red winter wheat country. Colorado is in the midst of a moderate drought in some places there, according to the drought monitor. And some areas there bordering with Colorado and western Kansas also running a little bit dry. But, you know, I find it a little puzzling because when you step back and you look at the 90-day and the 180-day rainfall departures from normal, it's not that great. And I'm thinking that we can fix this problem out there with one or two storms this spring. They've had some timely moisture. It hasn't been ideal for sure. Some of the wheat out there is not in the best shape. If we can get a couple of little rain events in the next few weeks, and I think we will, I think the crops will snap around and do okay out that way.
There have been some continuing rumors about problems in Ukraine. Of course, they would be overwintering like we have been. What do you think?
You know, they did have a lot of trouble last autumn getting the crop planted and established, winter wheat and rye both. And the moisture profile has improved in the last few weeks. They are still positioned to run into trouble, though, if they manage to get drier biased. And earlier this week, the models were suggesting, oh, it'd be 2 weeks before it precipitates in Ukraine again, and that had people a little bit concerned. Yesterday, we saw a little bit of a change in the midday model runs offering some rain out there in days 11 through 15, and we saw that again this morning. And I think we are going to get some timely rain to develop across that region. Now, the concern isn't just for the winter crops. Of course, it's about spring planting as well. The one thing I can say about the western parts of the former Soviet Union is that looking in the long-term trend models and stretching out through the spring, I do see a weak jet stream periodically in some of this region. So what that means basically is that it may be difficult to get a succession of big storms through the region. And as we heat up, it might end up being a little drier between weather systems. It's not a crisis. I wouldn't wave any big flag saying, oh, they're in big trouble. But it could go down that road if something changes just a little bit more on the dry side. So we're going to keep an eye on it. But for right now, I wouldn't get too excited about the situation there.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too. That is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.